Early the next morning, Serenity Parker lifted his head from the bald burlap he used for a pillow and peered out from beneath the freight wagon. Serenity blinked as if to clear his vision and stared through Dawn's milky, shadowy wash where the still, damp air was scented with pine smoke and fresh coffee. On the other side of the fire, Kuno Massey hung by both hands from a low pine branch, his boots dangling a foot above the ground. The burly young freighter was naked from the waist up. As he pulled himself toward the branch, the heavy muscles bunched and balled in his arms and shoulders, drawing the slab-like pectorals up toward his neck. His face was red, veins forking above the bridge of his nose. When his chin grazed the branch, he lowered himself slowly until his arms stretched straight above his shoulders, his boot heels brushing the ground. Parker blinked again and ran a hand across his mouth.
What in the name of God's got into you?
Massey brushed his chin against the branch three more times, then dropped, boots hitting the ground. He brushed his hands together and grabbed his shirt and hat from a mossy boulder.
Just keeping in shape for mule wrestling. Come on, old man. Time to get up. Coffee's done and the sun's nearly up.
You've gone ape on me, boy, sure enough.
My pa taught me that exercise. A pull-up, they call it. When I wrestled and boxed for extra money summers back home. If you're good, maybe I'll teach you.
I ain't no hairy-assed ape like some.
Kuno reached under the wagon, pulled out his bedroll and saddlebags he'd used for pillow. Tossing both into the wagon box, he prodded the old man with a boot toe.
Come on, Serenity. If I'd known you were going to lay around all morning like Jay Gould, I'd have sent you home when I first spied your mangy carcass falling off my tailgate.
Serenity rolled over and threw his blanket over his old gray head.
It's too early and my bones are chilled.
When Kuno spitted some of the venison over the fire and the aroma wafted over the wagon, the old man rolled out of his sugan. In a few minutes, he'd tugged his boots on and crawled out from beneath the big Murphy, wrapping a blanket over his shoulders and hitching up his pants.
Always did like the smell of venison on a cold autumn morn.
An hour later, the sun was up and the snow was all but melted off, leaving light mud and occasional fog wisps in its wake. The fog was especially thick over the creek, which they hugged on their right, rising up like steam from a slow-boiling river. Kuno hauled back on the mule's reins. Serenity turned his head to the right, furling his bushy brows.
What the hell do you suppose that's about?
Kuno stared across the creek toward a low, pine-covered rise about a half mile ahead. He didn't think it was likely to be committee members, but they might as well check it out. Kuno slapped the reins across the mule's backs. The team moved out. Serenity reached under the seat for his double bore and broke it open, making sure both barrels were loaded with wads. They rode for a half mile before crossing the creek at a rocky ford and mounting the northern bank spotted with wild currant and shagbush. Cows began to appear, a few skinny heifers and one-year-old steers overgrazing the stream banks, probably a settlement near. Gaining a shady cottonwood copse, Kuno stopped the team and sat listening. The voices seemed to originate from the other side of the trees. He wrapped the reins around the brake handle, grabbed his Winchester, and leapt to the ground.
Stay with the wagon.
Kuno jacked around into the Winchester's chamber, off-cocked the hammer, and jogged through the trees, angling toward the direction of the rising din. Once past the trees, Kuno bounded up a low hill pocked with rocks, pinyon pines, and junipers. Near the crest, he swept his hat from his head and hunkered down beside a square hunk of sandstone, which had probably tumbled off the northern ridge, and peered down the other side of the hill. A makeshift tent camp, with a few plank shacks, the usual smelly privies and trash heaps, and scrounging mutts, stretched across the flat beyond the hill's base. Cattle cropped the tough brown grass around the camp's perimeter, having already ravaged the creek bank. The little settlement was deserted at the moment. Probably every prospector who called the place home had gathered at a tall cottonwood on Kuno's side of the village, 50 yards from the hill's base. The crowd of 15 to 20 men milled in a close group. Several carried rifles. A few wore pistols strapped to their hips. One man triggered shots into the air as though to keep the gang's blood surging. Others carried shovels or hickory axe handles. Guno dropped his right knee to the ground and swept a lock of sandy blonde hair from his right eye. Most likely a shovel fight. Miners liked nothing more than to bash one another's skulls in with shovels. If they were really pissed and really drunk, they'd sling pickaxes. On his last trip, Guno had seen what was left after a pick fight. Until he was told better, he'd assumed a hog had been butchered. Guno was about to straighten up and head back to the wagon. The crowd shifted curiously. The center opened slightly, and two men in hats led another bareheaded man toward the sprawling cottonwood. Guno stayed hunkered down, staring into the crowd, holding the Winchester across his thighs. The man with the pistol must have emptied his cylinder because the gun had fallen silent. A rope was thrown over a branch of the cottonwood. Several men milled around the base of the tree. Suddenly, the crowd opened around the bareheaded man. He suddenly rose straight up toward the branch above, kicking and clawing at the rope around his neck, jerking this way and that. Short, cropped black hair capped a round face. He wore baggy duck trousers and fur-trimmed moccasins. Guno's heart thudded. Calm.
Let the heathen suffocate.
Teach him to stay on my mule.
Guno snapped the rifle to his shoulder. He aimed and squeezed the rifle's trigger. The slug sliced the rope above Kong's head cleanly. The Chinaman dropped, disappearing amidst the crowd. Guno pushed himself to his feet and, ejecting the spent shell, held the rifle straight out from his hip in one hand as he strode down the hill. He slid the barrel around the crowd, threatening, and slitted his eyes beneath the shading brim of his hat. The man who seemed to be the necktie party's leader stepped forward, a short, pudgy man with a thin red beard and floppy-brimmed green hat. He wore an old Civil War model pistol on his hip.
Who the hell are you?
Guno passed about 20 feet from the crowd, kept his rifle butt snugged against his belt, its hammer at full cock.
I'm the Chinaman's guardian angel. Kong?
The crowd parted as the Chinaman bolted through it, heading toward Guno. When he surfaced, he ran past the leader, who promptly stuck his right boot out. Kong's left ankle hit the boot, and hands tied behind his back, the Chinaman fell headlong into the sand and sage. The leader stepped forward, turned sideways, and poked an angry finger at Guno.
That son of a fucking hon tried to steal my mule. Now in a mining camp, the law for horse thieving, or mule thieving,
or any kind of thieving,
or any kind of thieving, is hanging. And you got no right to interfere.
Guno turned a quick glance. Serenity Parker had pulled the wagon up to the edge of the meadow, the two-bore resting across the oldster's thighs. He hauled back on the reins, stopping the mules, and sat scowling toward the crowd. Guno turned back to the leader, canted his head toward the Chinaman, whose eyes were swelling, blood trickling from his cracked and swollen lips.
His daughter was kidnapped. I'm sure he'd have returned the mule when he got her back, wouldn't you have, Kong?
The Chinaman had gained his knees and was glancing around anxiously. He looked at Guno and nodded.
I return!
You return, you bullshit!
Guno spied movement ahead and left. The man who'd been shooting his pistol into the air stepped out from behind another man who was holding an axe handle. The shooter flicked his old navy toward Guno, thumbing the hammer back. Guno pivoted, swinging the Winchester's barrel toward the shooter. The man fell to the ground, clutching his bloody forearm.
The son of a bitch shot me!
Guno lowered the Winchester's barrel slightly to aim at the man's privates.
Shut up!
Guno glanced at Kong.
Head over to the wagon. Move!
As Kong heaved himself to his feet, the leader stared at the smoking barrel of Kuno's Winchester and stepped back, holding his hands chest high in supplication. A scowl still pinched his nose, but fear had entered his eyes. He didn't say anything as Guno backed toward the wagon, swinging the Winchester's barrel around the crowd. Guno backed to within 15 feet of the wagon, then turned. Kong sat in the driver's box beside Serenity, who was sawing through the rope tying Kong's wrists behind his back. Guno walked around to the driver's side, climbed aboard, grabbed the reins off the brake handle, and released the brake. He flicked the reins, and the wagon jerked forward, away from the crowd. After they had ridden for a while, in grim silence, and they were sure the prospectors weren't following them, Serenity looked at the Chinaman.
What caused you to pull such a fool stunt anyway?
His daughter. He thought he'd steal a mountain right on up to the committee, twanging away with his bow and arrow. And rip the girl right out from under him.
The air had warmed, and they no longer wore coats. The only sign of last night's snow was a quicker pace to the streams they hugged as they climbed toward Sundance through fir-walled valleys.
Good way to get her killed. Good way to get yourself killed, too. Me? I seen the committee at work. Armed with just a bow and arrow, you wouldn't have a chance.
Kong stared straight ahead, the bridge of his blunt nose deeply creased.
Kong no dummy. I find Li Mei. Wait for night. Go in and steal her away.
That might work. It'd work better, though, to bide your time. Trail the gang slow. They're heading for Sundance. Got them a bank to rob. No doubt they'll split up a time or two before they get there. A gang that size never hangs together long. They get in women trouble or fighting trouble. Besides, Kennedy left his brother and several other men behind. He probably expects to meet up with them again soon. Some will fall back for a while, catch up to the others later. If we can knock off the stragglers, we'll have a smaller bunch to face when we finally meet Kennedy in Sundance.
They ride horses. We may not catch up to them. They might rob and be on their way, like rabbits with a fox in their heels.
Maybe. Comes to that, we'll rent horses in Sundance. Trail them from there.
By then, Li Mei could be dead.
That's true, too. A good way to make sure she's killed is to ride in like a donkey with cans tied to its tail.
With just a bow and arrow.
Take it from me, Kong. The keys to getting your daughter back are patience and relentlessness.
You young to know so much about manhunting.
Yep.
They hadn't ridden much farther before a four-mule hitch and a big Cleveland dead-axle freight wagon appeared, heading toward them around a bend in the trail ahead. Kuno recognized Bull Stevens and his cousin Lyle sitting in the driver's box, their floppy-brimmed hats flapping in the wind. Kuno reined in his own team. Bull Stevens did likewise, throwing his shoulders back. The wagon sat side by side, dust sifting. One of Stevens' big Arkansas blacks dropped several plops in the trail dust to Kuno's left. Stevens grinned and slitted his good eye. He'd lost the other one to the man who cuckolded him during the fight that left the cuckolder's throat laid wide, the man's soul sent to heaven.
That's what he thinks of you, Massey.
Your hitch doesn't have any better manners than you do, Bull. How they hanging, Lyle?
Lyle Stevens grimaced and cupped his crotch.
Funny you should mention them. I think I picked up some drip on the way up a trail.
Which whorehouse?
Heaven's Bane.
Aptly named.
What the hell you doing up here, Parker? You're supposed to be in Columbine, tending that privy you call a saloon.
You'll have to wet your whistle at Mrs. Mondova's. Me and Kuno got business. Manhunting business.
Kuno reproved the old man with a look, then turned to the freighters.
A pack of owl hoots killed Wade. Should be about 2 days ahead. Call themselves the Committee.
Oh, shit. That pack of curly wolves?
Seen them?
Stevens jerked a gloved thumb over his shoulder.
Hell, one of them's laid up in Heaven's Bane. Seen him last night. Some girl they had with him ran a pig sticker through his jaws.
Lyle scratched his flabby bear bicep, red and swollen from an insect bite.
Pinned his head to a wardrobe. Ugly damn mess. Still got blood on the floor and the poor bastard's upstairs howling like a trapped timber wolf.
Kuno glanced at Kong. The Chinaman stared at the two freighters, wide-eyed, veins bulging in his forehead. Kuno looked at Bull.
The others?
Hit it up the trail. We met them on the trail yesterday. Still had the girl with them. They hoorahed our mules out of sheer orneriness.
Damn near ran us off the road. If we hadn't already offloaded our freight, we'd be toothpicks at the bottom of Pilgrim's Gulch.
At least your pecker wouldn't be pussing up. Shit, I can smell it on you.
Have a good one, boys.
Kuno flicked the reins across the mules' backs. As the wagon rolled forward, Kuno favored Kong with another glance. The Chinaman stared ahead, his brows like a black anvil hooding his eyes.
I knew she would fight.
At least she's still alive, Kong.
Yesterday. What of today?
Afternoon, ladies.
Kuno Massey pinched his hat brim and squinted against the wagon dust catching up to him. He, Serenity Parker, and the Chinaman Kong had just pulled up to the big, sprawling, unpainted barracks that was the Heaven's Bane Whorehouse, Saloon, and Gambling Parlor. Spread out upon the raised front stoop before them, a dozen or so girls lounged about the wicker chairs, bar stools, and porch rail, taking the cool, clear afternoon air.
Hattie.
A small blonde sat on the railing in only her pantaloons and low-cut chemise, one arm on a rail post as she regarded the three newcomers over her left shoulder.
You boys stopping early for the day?
Serenity Parker ran a gloved hand across his sunburned nose.
She's pretty as a speckled pup.
Well, thank you, sir. You look like a man needing a special dance. The mattress kind.
Honey, I'm afraid you'd stop this old heart.
On the other side of Serenity, Kong found nothing to laugh at. He stared at the girls with grim purpose, his anxiety showing in his wide brown eyes and the veins standing out on his forehead.
Actually, we ain't here for romping, ladies. We're looking for a Chinese girl.
Kuno canted his head toward Kong.
This man's daughter. We were told she rode here with a gang two nights back.
A haggard-looking brunette leaning against the front wall near the door was smoking a long black cheroot.
I say she did. Rode off with him, too, after running a pig sticker through one man's jaws.
Right here.
The blonde on the railing, placing a long, pale finger low against her cheek, right about where her jaws hinged.
Pinned to a wardrobe till one of his friends worked him free.
Gave the girl a good working over, too.
The brunette gazed through her windblown hair at Kong.
I'm sorry, mister. There's no telling what's happened to her by now.
Kong rose in his seat like a slow-blowing volcano. He clenched his fists at his sides.
Where is this son of a bitch Li Mei Stab? Where is...
All the girls looked at him wistfully. The brunette lifted the corners of her thin mouth slightly and shuttled her glance back to Kong.
He's upstairs, room at the end of the hall. He's been in so much pain, carrying on so crazy, breaking things, we had to sedate him with laudanum and whiskey. And a few other things.
Kong turned to Kuno.
We stop here for a while.
The Chinaman pressed his hide-wrapped skinning knife against his belt as if securing it. He climbed down the other side of the wagon, walked around the mules, and mounted the porch steps. He strode purposefully past the whores and entered the Heaven's Bane by one of its two front doors, leaving the door standing wide open behind him. The blonde whore regarded Kuno and Serenity with smoky eyes.
You boys want a drink or a poke while you're waiting?
Kuno wrapped the reins around the brake handle.
Speaking for myself, I was wondering if you gals might have a fast horse in your stable. One I could rent for a few days.
Most of our horses are buggy nags, but every once in a while our humble abode becomes a man's final resting place, if you get my drift. You might be able to find one or two spry orphans out in the corral yonder. We got a hostler out there somewhere, Kimball Logan, but he's probably fishing this time of the day. Help yourself. Leave a dollar or two so Kimball can buy him a new brand of chaw.
Kuno pinched his hat brim.
Obliged.
He turned to Serenity, staring up at him curiously.
I'm going to ride ahead, see if I can fetch Kong's daughter. I got a feeling time's running out for her. You take over the wagon. I'll trail back when I've found her.
How you going to get her back with all them hard cases swarming around her?
Kuno jumped down from the wagon and turned his gaze back to Serenity.
I'll figure that out when I catch up to him.
He rummaged around in the wagon box for his war bag and bedroll, then grabbed his rifle and headed for the stables flanking the house.
Keep Kong with you.
You sure you know what you're doing?
Kuno didn't turn around as he mounted the hill toward the corral and stables.
Nope.
Kuno chose the only one of the three riding horses in the corral that looked like it still remembered what a saddle was and hadn't been spoiled by oats and long, lazy days following the buggy mares around with its proverbial hat in its hands. The blaze-faced roan was high-stepping and long-legged enough for fast travel, but its broad chest bespoke a good set of lungs as well. Kuno rigged the horse with a worn but adequate saddle he found in the tack room, then gigged the horse around to the front of the whorehouse, halting beside the wagon. The bemused whores sat in fascinated silence, drinking and smoking.
What the hell's going on up there?
Kong's getting some of his anger out. What do you think he's doing to him in there?
Whatever it is, I wish he'd teach me the trick. It'd come in handy once I run down the leader of those butchering renegades.
Kuno ground his heels against the roan's flanks. He galloped down the hill and out of the yard, crossing the creek on a wooden bridge, then swerving back onto the main trail towards Sundance. He soon found the roan was indeed fast, as well as a stayer, as he and the horse whipped through one canyon and over one pass after another, taking the switchbacks with their heads down, barely slowing for the turns, stopping only for short blows at ridge crests or for water, or to let an ore wagon or a prospector's supply wagon pass. The roan was nearly as much horse as Kuno's own paint Renegade, which he'd left in his own wagon barn in Denver. He rode hard the first afternoon out from Heaven's Bane and camped in a hollow along a creek feeding into the St. Vrain River. Up at false dawn, and not bothering with coffee but only some jerky and dry biscuits, he and the horse galloped over the long, sloping shoulder of Taylor Mountain. By 1 o'clock that afternoon, he moved into a clearing in which a handful of makeshift tents and cabins sat on the north bank of the St. Vrain River. Cloud shadows scudded. Several people swirled pans in the river shallows, while a handful of women scrubbed clothes along the shore. As Kuno rode toward the women, they cast him furtive, fearful glances. A stocky, plain-faced, middle-aged woman with dull red hair falling from her soiled poke bonnet stepped out from the crowd to meet him.
Just ride on, mister. We don't want no more trouble.
Behind her, five other women of various ages seemed to cower as they sidestepped toward the river, holding hands. A few glanced at Kuno warily. Kuno tipped his hat back off his forehead.
I take it the Clayton Kennedy bunch has been through here.
The woman looked at him skeptically, flicked a lock of lusterless hair from her face.
They sacked our camp. Killed a good 3/4 of our men, threw them in the river like trash. Killed 2 girls. Took another one for their pleasure.
Bailing her wet apron in her freckled fists, the woman stared up at Kuno, her eyes flickering around his chest as if looking for something.
You law?
No, but I'm on Kennedy's trail just the same, though. I aim to kill him and the rest of his horde.
He run roughshod over your camp, too?
You could say that. How long since he left here?
Yesterday.
The woman canted her head upstream.
He left 3 killers behind. They're waiting for someone Kennedy left farther off down the trail. His kin or some such. Those 3 took our weapons and been having one heck of a real good time while they wait.
She glanced back at the other women, several of whom sported bruised faces, including a couple of black eyes, then turned back to Kuno.
The menfolk we're left with are either too old or too young or too wounded to do anything without a gun.
Kuno looked upstream. He couldn't see much beyond a rocky bend.
Up that away?
They're having a swim up beyond that horseshoe. We're supposed to fix them a nice meal later, when we get done washing their clothes.
Kuno jerked back on the roan's reins, backing the horse away from the women and the river.
You can stop washing their clothes.
Well, there's 3, and they're poison mean. You best ride on, young fella. Leave them to God.
How about if I leave them to the devil?
Kuno neck-reined the roan and moved upstream, angling across the horseshoe. A dead, bloated dog lay in the short grass and sage, riddled with bullets and sending up a nose-wrinkling death stench. When Kuno had ridden 70 yards, he spotted 3 men splashing in a wide, shallow stretch of river, the stones showing just beneath the surface. The water glittered in the afternoon light, the splashes sending up beaded jewels. Kuno halted the horse, keeping a low rise between him and the renegades. 2 men in the river. 1 stood along the shore, his back to Kuno, wearing a soggy pair of wash-worn ball brigands. The standing hard case bent his knees slightly and turned right, his stream of yellow piss arcing high over the water, glistening. The man farther out in the stream floated on his back in a shallow pool.
Quit pissing in the stream! Damn you, Germany! You're making the water unfit for man or beast!
The other man was lying flat in a sandy patch in the rocky bed, lolling like a dead man, his head thrown back, eyes squeezed shut. Like the other man in the river, he appeared naked.
Fuck you! I'll piss where I want!
Kuno dismounted from the roan and looked at the Winchester's worn walnut stock jutting up from the saddle boot. The rifle could be an awkward instrument at close range. The .45 Colt should be adequate. Kuno turned and, leading the roan, strode toward the shoreline, where the man who'd been pissing now sat on a boulder, an ankle hiked on a knee, rolling a smoke from a hide Makin's pouch. A Spencer carbine leaned against the rock near the man's left elbow. He paused while rolling the Quirly to brush something off his left big toe. Kuno stopped 15 feet behind him and kicked a rock. The man jerked his head toward him, his long, wet hair plastered against his skull. Water shone in his mustache and beard.
Who the hell are you?
Kuno stared at him. Suddenly, the .45 was in Kuno's right hand. He shot the man on the rock through the bottom of his left foot, shredding the big toe. The man fell off the rock, grabbing his foot. The man farther out in the river awkwardly tried to stand. The man stumbled back, clutching his right arm around the bicep. Kuno turned the barrel slightly right, dropped the barrel half an inch. The man closer to shore was up and running toward the boulder, 10 feet upstream from Kuno, where several cartridge belts were coiled. Kuno took aim at the man's left thigh. As he grabbed his leg in mid-stride, his feet slipped out from under him and he fell into the water. Holding his foot with one hand, the man with the shredded big toe lifted his head.
What the fuck you think you're doing, you son of a bitch?
Kuno shot his left earlobe off. The man farther out gained his feet and ran feebly toward the opposite bank. Kuno stopped him with a .45 slug through the back of his left calf. The man dropped and lolled in a knee-deep pool, gritted teeth flashing white. The man nearer the shore crawled to his hands and knees, blood mixing with the water sluicing off his left thigh. He didn't say anything, only stared with animal fear and fury at Kuno. Splintered bones protruded from his right forearm. Kuno blew a hole through the man's right elbow. The man smacked his face on a half-submerged rock. Kuno turned. The stocky, red-headed woman stood 15 feet behind him. The other women and girls flanked her. All stared agape into the stream where the three hard cases lay bleeding. Kuno holstered the .45 and climbed into the saddle. He turned the roan back the way he'd come and pinched his hat brim at the women.
They're all yours, ladies.
He rode on past the staring women, angling back toward the main trail. He passed several old men and a few youngsters moving toward the stream with curious, fearful frowns on their faces. Kuno grinned and put the roan into a gallop. It wasn't hard to cut the killer's trail sign. They were among the few horseback riders to have taken the wagon trace in recent days. Judging by the depth and distance of their horses' shod prints, and by the number of times they halted along the trail, the gang was in no hurry. In fact, the evening of the day he'd left the sacked prospectors' camp, Kuno caught up to them. They'd bivouacked in a box canyon off the North Fork of Destiny Creek, which ran cold and fast off the slopes of Renegade Pass. The mountain loomed in the southwest, its bald slopes mantled with fields of dirty snow. On its northern shoulder sat the booming mining village of Sundance, too low and far away, a good 12 miles, to be seen from this vantage. The water filled the air with the smell of wet grass and rock, waterlogged deadfalls, moss, ferns, and mushrooms. In a chill rain and under a fragrant spruce canopy, his buckskin's collar pulled to his neck, Kuno sat atop the Slot Canyon's northern rim, a half mile down the canyon from the Renegades. Through breaks in the rain and fog settling low over the canyon, he could make out their horses, tied to two separate picket lines near the stream on the gorge floor. Blue camp smoke ribboned skyward through the evergreen canopy, which was so thick that Kuno caught only fleeting glimpses of the gang themselves, milling about the fire, hatted silhouettes in heavy coats or rain slickers. As he sat scrutinizing the camp and wondering how he was going to get down to the girl, if she was still alive, he saw two men climb the steep walls of slick black granite on either side of the canyon. Both men carried rifles. The sentries would no doubt spend the night on the ridges overlooking the canyon. Earlier, he'd spotted two men heading down to cover the canyon's narrow mouth. Damn, they weren't going to make it easy. He considered waiting until the next day. It was doubtful, though, there'd be an easier place or a better time to spring the girl. In fact, the Box Canyon's walls might work to his advantage, once he had Li Mei in hand, that is. He wasn't sure why he was risking his neck. The girl was Kong's worry. But then, in spite of the Chinaman's proficiency with an Indian bow, he seemed so blasted helpless. A black sheep in a foreign land. His daughter taken captive by killers. Kuno might even be able to kill a few of the gang before he got out of the canyon. But then why push his luck? He'd nab the girl and get her back to her father before running down the gang, preferably one by one or two by two. These were cold-blooded killers, and more than a couple were probably as good with a hog leg as Kuno was. After hunkering down against the slope, he pulled his hat brim over his eyes. Might as well grab some shut-eye. His horse was tethered in another shallower canyon a half mile north, saddled and ready to split the wind when needed. When he opened his eyes again, the darkness pressed close. Through the pine boughs, stars made a milky speckled wash across the heavens. No moon, just enough light to get him down the canyon wall. He grabbed the rope he'd carried in his war bag. It was only 20 feet, but it should take him down the sheerest part of the drop. He'd left his Winchester, too clumsy for climbing, with the horse. He wasn't carrying a spare pistol this trip, so the 45 Colt would have to do. Nudging the pistol's butt compulsively, he walked slowly up the canyon, keeping away from the lip so the stars wouldn't outline him. A dull orange glow appeared 40 yards ahead, around a slight curve in the canyon wall. He stopped and dropped to his haunches. The small, round glow brightened for a second, then, dimming, arced toward the ground. The picket on this side of the canyon was enjoying a smoke as he strolled along the wall. He seemed to be staying close to the camp. Kuno moved forward at a crouch, skimming the trees on his left. When he found the route he'd scouted before, he tied the rope around a stout pine. Grabbing the hemp in his gloved hands, he backed slowly down the scaly stone surface of the ridge, weaving between shrubs and blocky chunks of granite and weather-gnarled trees thumbing out from the wall. When he came to the end of the rope, he leapt to a shelf, landing and bending his knees to absorb the fall. He froze, crouching against the black granite, listening, hoping the thump of his boots hadn't been heard below. He turned. The stream was a pale silver line twisting through the middle of the gorge. On Kuno's side of it, the fire was a red flickering smudge below and left, ghostly smoke puffs wisping through the pines. The fire was down, which meant the men were probably asleep. It was a slim chance that the picket on the canyon's other rim could see Kuno against the black granite. Still, the freighter moved quickly, wanting to be on the wall as briefly as possible. From the ledge, he climbed down easily as the grade gentled slightly and there were more pine trunks to break his descent. He appraised each feature of his trail, committing it to memory for when he returned with the girl. When he reached the canyon floor, he leapt a small rivulet gurgling out from a spring, crossed a deadfall aspen, and stepped on a dry twig. Hissing through his clenched teeth, he stopped and dropped, pressing his chin to the cool, damp ground. To his ears, the breaking branch had sounded like a rifle shot. Apparently, it had gone unheard in the camp. The killers probably couldn't hear much above the stream. Besides, they were probably relying on their horses and the pickets to warn them of trouble. Kuno pushed himself to his knees, glanced around with one hand on his pistol butt, then straightened and headed across the canyon toward the creek. He pushed quietly through the forest. Gaining the creek, he headed upstream, moving faster now that the water covered the sound of his movements. He spied six of the renegade's horses tethered to his left. Not sensing him, they remained asleep on their feet, statue still. Five minutes later, Kuno lay hunkered down in the brush near the water, between a spruce and a mossy boulder, staring into the clearing where the hard cases lay spread out around the dying fire. It took him another 5 minutes to pick out the girl, or what he thought was the girl, hunkered on the far side of the fire under an overarching spruce bough. The small, dark figure curled under a blanket with no saddle or saddlebag to pillow her head had to be her. When he was sure the renegades were asleep, Kuno moved down the roiling creek, feeling the refreshing humidity and the spray against his face, then circled around and crabbed toward the girl from the opposite direction. Under an aspen tree, he paused to stare at the small bundle before him, under a pine bough, trying to figure out which end was her head. Spying a lock of straight black hair falling from a blanket fold, he crawled even closer. When his face was 6 inches from her rising and falling shoulder, he rose up on his knees, snaked an arm over her body, and pressed the palm of his hand down hard across her mouth and nose. At the same time, he slid his other arm beneath her slender waist. The girl was instantly awake, tense in his arms, struggling.
Easy, damn it. I'm here to help.
A cautious, befuddled light entered her eyes as she stared up at him, her body slowly relaxing. He removed his hand from her mouth.
No more screams. I'm going to get you out of here. Back to your father.
Kuno's own heart pounded as he pulled the blanketed bundle straight back with him, back crabbing the way he'd come. When he was beyond the aspen, he stood and lifted her to his waist and dragged her through the brush toward the head of the gorge. He moved swiftly, his own heart racing, lungs burning. 20 yards from the camp, he whipped the blanket off her body. She wore denim pants, a torn gray shirt, and moccasins similar to her father's. Her ankles were tied, her wrists tethered behind her back. Quickly, keeping his ears pricked for sounds from the camp, Kuno unsheathed his knife and cut the ropes. He sheathed the knife and looked at her.
Can you stand?
She rolled over, placed her hands on the ground, tried to push herself up. No good. She turned her frightened face to him, her eyes beseeching, a wing of hair across her mouth as she rubbed her right wrist. He'd had a feeling that having been tied for so long, she wouldn't be able to stand, much less run.
That's all right.
Kuno grabbed her arm, bent his knees, and eased her over his shoulder.
It'll be faster this way anyway.
Moving quickly, he headed back the way he'd come, pausing near the creek to give the camp a quick study. The renegades were still asleep, the creek's roar covering their snores. So far, so good. He made it back to the canyon wall without incident, carried the girl up the wall, crouching and gritting his teeth against the grade. At the ledge, he eased her down against the rock face.
Any feeling in your hands and feet yet?
She flexed her hands, reached down to rub her feet through her moccasins.
Some...
Kuno grabbed the end of the rope hanging just above the ledge. Casting a quick glance into the canyon, spying no movement, he pulled the girl to her feet, looped the rope around her waist, and slip-knotted it.
I'm gonna climb to the top and pull you up.
He lunged at a rock a foot above his head, got a grip, and pulled himself up. Then reached for another rock and pulled himself another 5 feet. He dug his fingers and the toes of his boots into any nook or cranny he could find, relieved to grasp the occasional hidden shelf in the darkness. Keeping his chin up, he blinked against the sweat stinging his eyes as he climbed. He swiped a hand against his gun butt occasionally, making sure it was there, as he swept the rocks above with his eyes, climbing toward the stars, capping the ridge crest. He climbed for 10 minutes, then cast another look toward the ridge. He was closing on it now, 10 feet away. Adrenaline spurred him onward, and he gripped a gnarled cedar root, planted his boot on a slight lip to his left, then pulled at the root and kicked off his left boot heel. His head was a foot beneath the ridge crest when cigarette smoke filled his nostrils. A second before he'd identified the smell, his heart leapt. He edged his eyes above the lip and stared through small rocks and sage tufts. A man's silhouette sat before him, holding a quirly to his mouth. The quirly glowed, dimly lighting the man's narrow, unshaven face, hawk nose, and the underside of his soiled hat brim. Bandoliers crossed his chest. The man lifted his rifle in one hand and aimed the barrel at Kuno.
Looky what I found here!
Kuno dropped his head beneath the ridge's lip, gritting his teeth as the .44 round carved a furrow across his right temple. Wincing against the instant headache, he pressed his forehead to the stone and clawed his .45 from its holster. Digging the fingers of his left hand into the ridge crest above his shoulder, Kuno raised the Colt's barrel above his head. Kuno lifted his head to peer into the darkness above the ridge. The man stumbled to Kuno's right. He dropped to a knee, clutching his belly in the hand that had been holding the rifle. Blood dribbling down his temple, Kuno hoisted himself up and over the top, quickly gaining his feet and striding toward the night guard lying in the brush. The man was trying to draw a pistol from a shoulder holster worn over a beaded leather vest. His chest and belly glistened with fresh blood. Kuno shot him through the forehead, then turned to the ridge, listening.
The drink's gone! God damn it, someone nabbed her! Saddle the fucking horses!
Kuno sheathed the six-shooter and ran back to the ridge's lip. He grabbed the rope and looked down to where the girl made a vague outline against the rock face. Her face was a brown oval canted toward him.
I'm hauling you up. Use your feet if you can.
I can.
Now!
Kuno ground his heels into the turf and pulled hand over fist, leaning forward and putting his shoulders into it, his thick neck bulging.
Shot came from over there!
Kuno shunted his gaze across the canyon. The other picket was probably standing atop the opposite ridge, pointing in his direction. The man had seen the gun flashes. He could probably even make out Kuno and the girl's figure toiling along the ridge.
Come on, girl!
Li Mei didn't weigh much, probably not even 100 pounds, so he had her within an arm's reach in under a minute. Just then, a slug shattered against stone below the girl. Holding the rope taut in one hand, Kuno reached down with the other and grabbed her arm. Kuno pulled the girl straight up and set her down beside him. She was a gamer, though, and quickly pulled herself to her feet. She shook her hair from her eyes and looked up at Kuno expectantly. Two slugs plunked into the brush and rocks at Kuno's and the girl's feet. A couple of hard cases, keying on the picket shots, were shooting from directly below. Kuno grabbed the girl's arm and pulled her away from the ridge lip, then crouched to regard her gravely.
I've got a horse about 200 yards that way. Think you can make it?
I can make it.
Automatically, Kuno grabbed his rope from the tree and quickly coiled it over his arm.
Let's go.
He took the girl's hand and began running away from the canyon. She limped along boldly for a while, but after 30 yards, she slowed, her knees bending.
My feet are still numb.
I've got you.
Kuno turned, stooped, threw her over his shoulder, and resumed running. The girl flopping on his arm and down his back as he leapt sage shrubs and rabbit brush. The girl didn't weigh much, but she'd begun to feel twice her weight by the time he'd gained the opposite ridge crest and started his descent. Halfway down, he stopped, set her down against a boulder, and dropped to one knee. He canted his head, listening.
What are you doing?
Shh!
They are coming.
Come on.
Kuno gentled her over his shoulder and resumed his weaving course down the ridge. The roan stood where he'd staked it, near a spring nestled in a cottonwood grove, starlight gleaming on its hide like sequins. Kuno set the girl on the horse's back, behind the saddle, then grabbed the reins and climbed into the leather.
Hold on tight, girl. We're gonna ride like hell. Hyah!
He turned the horse away from the trees and ground his heels into its flanks. They bowled through brush, left a narrow creek, and headed south through the canyon, which he was only somewhat certain had an outlet. If he was wrong, the killers were going to have a high old time very soon, picking Kuno and Lee May off like pintails on a back eddy. As the horse rode haltingly through the brush and pines along the creek, the canyon walls leaned in, blocking out the stars. Kuno's heart fell. A box canyon. Then they traced a long, gentle bend, and the pines opened, leaning back against the canyon walls. Not far beyond, a crack shone in the wall ahead, salted with flickering stars. The horse balked at the rocks crowding the canyon's back door. Kuno cooed to the mount, reining it this way and that until they found a game path through the rubble.
Hyah!
After one final leap, the horse and riders were through the wall, tearing off down another wider canyon on the other side. They'd ridden 10 minutes when shadows moved 50 yards ahead, starlight winking off metal. Kuno checked the roan down.
Shit!
The canyon the killers had occupied must not have been a box canyon either. He turned the horse and galloped back the way he'd come. Seconds later, he again hauled back on the reins. More men were riding toward him, jostling silhouettes against the pine-enclosed game path. They had him surrounded, cut off. Kuno jerked his head from left to right. Up the pine-covered hill to his left, a faint opening in the trees.
Hold on, girl!
She tightened her arms about his waist and pressed her cheek to his sweat-slicked back as he neck-reined the horse right. In seconds, they were bounding up the knoll. The roan dug its hooves in as the grade steepened and the trail turned slightly right. Kuno cast a quick glance over his left shoulder. Behind him, the killers rode single file along the overgrown wagon trail, ducking under pine boughs protruding from the forest on both sides. The trail forked. Avoiding bullets, Kuno followed the right fork, the horse climbing still higher. Too high, too steep. They couldn't stay ahead of the gang at this pace. On a slight level shelf in the hillside, Kuno reined the horse to a skidding halt and slipped out of the saddle. He grabbed Li Mei in both arms, ripped her off the horse's back, her hair flying. Kuno had seen what looked like the frame of an old digging on the left. The cover was the only chance he and the girl had to hold the killers at bay. Holding the girl's left arm, he slipped the Winchester from the horse's sheath, then rammed the butt against the roan's right hip. The roan galloped up the hill and away. Running, half dragging the girl behind him, Kuno glanced back the way he'd gone. The killers approached in a mass.
They're on their feet! Run them the fuck down!
Kuno stopped and shoved the girl forward.
Run into that mine and get as far back as you can.
He rammed a shell into the Winchester's breech, dropped to a knee, and aimed at the shadowy horde approaching, now within 30 yards. With the killers moving for cover, Kuno bolted forward through the pines. Ahead, the girl climbed the strewn mine tailings on her hands and knees. Once past the rubble, she turned into the timbered frame of the mine portal. Kuno followed her, holding the Winchester in his right hand. From what he could tell in the darkness, the tunnel was low but deep, and it dropped quickly into the hill. It smelled like minerals, gunpowder, and bat guano.
Oh, God. Oh, God. There's nowhere to go. We're trapped.
Watching the shadows spread out around him, he knew the girl was right. They had nowhere to go. Kuno probably had a dozen 44 shells in his pistol belt, maybe six. 45s for the revolver. Doubt there was a back door to the mine shaft. The gang could simply wait them out. One of the gang members seemed to be reading his mind.
All you done is found a grave, you son of a bitch. Why don't you throw the girl out? No point in her dying when it ain't necessary. I was just gonna give her to a friend, has a whorehouse to Sundance.
Better she die of the clap than lead poisoning.
Kuno and Li Mei moved back into the shaft and lay prone on the dusty wooden floor, strewn with rocks fallen from the ceiling. Kuno returned fire, keeping the brow of the floor before him, which absorbed most of the hard case's fuselade.
I reckon all I did was take you out of the frying pan and throw you into the fire. Maybe you best do what Kennedy wants. Take your chances in Sundance.
I will not. I will die here with you, the man you tried to save me.
You'll be dying with a copper-riveted fool. I couldn't have dragged you into a worse situation if I tried.
Just then the floor dropped an inch or so. Kuno's heart stopped. He held his breath, looking down. The planks hadn't been laid on solid ground. They'd been laid across a hole.
You know...
Kuno pushed slowly onto his elbows.
I might have spoke too soon.
As Kuno threw an arm toward the girl, the floor opened up like a giant mouth.